Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. We read with great sadness, Jim, that according to The Economist, the actual literal Three Martini Lunch is fading away because people are upset about people having alcohol during the day. But the article also says that that also leads to more innovation and creativity. So go with that with what you will. But the virtual and online and political Three Martini Lunch is alive and well. And we are more than happy to talk about martini number one today, which is always our good martini. And it was just yesterday that we had Erskine Bowles talking about, back in 2011, how great he thought Paul Ryan was. And Jim is still repeating his four-adjective mantra about Paul Ryan's approach to the economy. And but today we go to President Obama himself. This was an interview he did with Jake Tapper of ABC News just after the House passed its version of Obamacare in late 2009. Because right now, between Paul Ryan's budget and the Romney campaign, there's a lot of accusations flying back and forth about which one does more damage to Medicare. And here's what Jake Tapper asked the president and how the president responded when it came to Medicare cuts back in 2009.
One of the concerns about health care and how you pay for it, one-third of the funding comes from cuts to Medicare.
Right.
Are you willing to pledge that whatever cuts in Medicare are being made to fund health insurance, one-third of it, that you will veto anything that tries to undo that?
Yes. I actually have said that it is important for us to make sure this thing is deficit neutral, without tricks. I said I wouldn't sign a bill that didn't meet that criteria. And what I also said in that speech to the joint session was that I'm willing to put in some safeguards where if we don't obtain the savings that have been promised, then we've got to make adjustments in terms of the benefits.
In terms of the benefits, Jim, and he just accepted Jake Tapper's premise that Medicare cuts were a part of this, a third of it, in fact. He accepted that without any objection whatsoever. So I guess props to Stephanie Cutter for telling the truth. She's obviously going to get in a lot of trouble for doing that. But David Axelrod's record of being completely out of touch with reality is unscathed. And he's, of course, pretending that none of this ever happened. And since the Romney campaign's not going with the Ryan plan, they should have the upper hand on this.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating that, you know, that obviously you get the feeling the Romney campaign knew that the moment they picked Paul Ryan, that the Obama response was going to be Medicare, Medicare, Medicare. So as we are having this conversation, Greg, I'm getting an email in my email box, Mitt Romney, I will restore President Obama's Medicare cuts. If I become president, I'm going to restore that $716 billion to the Medicare trust fund so that current seniors can know that a trust fund is not being raided. The Obama campaign probably did not expect to be accused of the ones cutting Medicare coming right out of the bat. And the idea of, you know, there was a headline from Jake Tapper, the guy in that interview you just played. The headline was Obama, Ryan, Romney support Medicare cuts. Greg, I will take that headline. The Ryan reform plan very much changes Medicare. When they say, you know, it changes Medicare as we know it, yeah. And you know what? The Medicare as we know it is going to collapse. So the status quo is untenable. The question is, how do we do it? But the idea of, you know, if Obama can't say, I'm protecting your Medicare and Paul Ryan is cutting it, we're both cutting it, but my cuts aren't nearly as bad as his cuts. I think that's a fight that the Romney-Ryan campaign wins. That basically, as soon as you break up the convenient storyline of Democrats as the good guys and Republicans as the bad guys, and it turns into, no, our cuts are totally different from their cuts. Once you get into that, I have a feeling that a lot of people will, the traditional Democrat advantage on this will start to dissipate. So the fact that they are playing aggressiveness on this is good. And the fact that we have this, you know, this audio from 2009 of Obama saying, yeah, we're cutting Medicare. I think that's, you know, going to be a very effective tool that, you know, the traditional playbook is not going to work here.
It's not that conservatives are all gung-ho, like Jim explained, about preserving Medicare as we know it, but making sure that everybody knows the facts on this, and basically the president and his campaign not anywhere close to saying the same thing they were when this was actually being debated. So good for Jake Tapper for getting that out back then. Probably didn't know just how significant it would be now, but it certainly is at this point in the debate. One of the things, of course, we mentioned that could potentially be a problem with adding Paul Ryan and his budget details to the ticket, Jim, is America ready for an adult conversation? Will the Democrats actually engage in an adult conversation? And so far, unfortunately, the answer seems to be no. Here's the president, first of all, for some reason, roundly criticizing Mitt Romney for not wanting to support wind subsidies anymore. But then he takes a dig, which tells you at the level that this Democrat campaign is at right now.
During a speech a few months ago, Governor Romney even explained his energy policy this way. I'm quoting here, "You can't drive a car with a windmill on it." That's what he said about wind power. You can't drive a car with a windmill on it. Now, I don't know if he's actually tried that. I know he's had other things on his car.
So, Jim, Mitt Romney's opposed to the energy program of mine that's been completely a failure. So let me point out once again that he once put his dog on the roof during a family vacation.
Greg, I have some late-breaking news just handed to me. Obama ate a dog. If they want, every time they bring up Seamus, we can point out that, you know, Purina Puppy Chow has a completely different meaning to President Obama. For anyone not familiar with this particular story, it's back when Barack Obama was a young boy in Indonesia. Undoubtedly, he was served this by his stepfather, and it's not a matter of that, you know. As far as we know, Greg, there is no evidence that Barack Obama ate dogs well into adulthood or anything like that. However, the idea of judging Mitt Romney based on the dog on the roof, dog carrier on the roof story from way back when, if you want to make this race about who's done what to a dog, we can do that, Mr. President. I feel pretty good about our chances in that one. Because, you know, Seamus survived the tail and turned out fine. And, you know, he may or may not have enjoyed being up on the roof. But the dog that President Obama ate is not available for comment. and so, you know, if you really want to drive the dog lovers of this country crazy, we can tell these stories. I think what's interesting is that the Seamus story was beloved by Democrats. Gail Collins, the New York Times, mentioned it in like 50 columns and was, you know, there was a strange obsession. And then, of course, I believe it was the great Jim Treacher over at Daily Caller who comes out and observes, hey, you know, here's this section in Obama's autobiography. If you want to talk about dogs, we can talk about dogs. And it stopped for a while. And now Romney has picked Ryan. It seems like the polls have kind of gone back to being about dead even. The convention's coming up. Romney's probably going to get a bump out of that. You know, they're at a tough point for the Obama campaign. And they come out and they start playing, doing the dog stuff again. And so right after, you know, as we just mentioned that previous martini, Paul Ryan is, you know, making sure this is going to be a serious, you know, presidential debate about one of the toughest issues in front of us, entitlement reform, unsustainable entitlement programs. And the Obama response is dog jokes. Ha-ha. You know, I mean, that's we know what the choice is before us, or don't we, Greg? You know. So it's a bizarre move. We can say this is one of those cases where the bad martini for us doesn't seem that bad. If Obama and Axelrod and his speech writing team and all these folks really think that Seamus on the roof stories are the right, you know, the right call here, the right play. Because, by the way, Greg, he made it like several times yesterday.
Oh, right.
This was not some one-off, you know, brain fart moment. We'll get to that when we talk about Biden in the third martini. This clearly was part of the Obama messaging for yesterday. And why they think Seamus is going to work well for them is really kind of fascinating. And I hope he brings it up in the debates. I hope Obama mentioned it in his convention speech. Make this as Seamus-focused as possible. Because I think, you know, we've already had a shameless Obama campaign, Greg. Perhaps it's appropriate we should have a Seamus Obama campaign as well.
Yes, absolutely. And you alluded to our third martini. If you thought the discourse involving Mitt Romney's dog was beneath the dignity of a presidential campaign, enter Vice President Joe Biden in Danville, Virginia. He didn't realize he was in Virginia because he told the audience there he was excited about the chance to win North Carolina again. That notwithstanding, that's a typical Joe Biden moment. This, however, is not, where Joe Biden seems to invoke, and probably more than seems, invokes slavery in terms of explaining Mitt Romney's position on Wall Street reform.
Look at what they value and look at their budget and what they're proposing. Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put y'all back in chains.
Jim, even the room there in Danville was a little bit taken aback by that, and they're rabid Obama supporters. So, you know, apparently in the world of Obama and Biden, if you don't like their version of cleaning up Wall Street, then, well, you're a slave master or something.
Greg, have you ever heard a less natural word in a sentence than y'all? This would be Vice President Joe Biden from the Delaware, of the Delmarva Peninsula, saying y'all. By any chance, do you think he's targeting that comment at a particular demographic? Because notice he emphasizes back in chains. It's not, you know, Romney's lack of Wall Street reform will chain you to some terrible economic. No, it's back in chains. Greg, is there any particular demographic for whom the phrase back in chains might have a emotional significance, some sort of historical peculiar institution that might this might be, you know? And then, of course, then he goes, oh, I just meant metaphor. You know, they talk about, you know, Republicans talk about unshackling the economy. It's a, you know, like, come on. He's one of those guys where he basically will say something, and then everybody in the entire room will react a particular way. He'll be absolutely totally convinced that everybody in the room misunderstood that. And I think those kind of like, you know, the the whoosh of air going out of the room, or people inhaling as they hear Biden say that yesterday, illuminates the fact that this was a heavy-handed accusation that the other side wants to bring back slavery. And as you know, I noted in the Morning Jolt, for a Democrat to make this accusation against the party of Abraham Lincoln is quite ironic. I mean, it's what we should come to expect. It's worth noting the Romney campaign hit back hard. Romney saying that this was a campaign of hate. Take your campaign of hate back to Chicago. I mean, this is, you know, on Morning Joe this morning, they said this is now DEFCON 1 or 5, which one the really high one is. You know, that basically the keys are in the nuclear ignition, you know, machines. And they're, this is about, you know, we thought we saw negative campaigning before. I mean, once you accuse the opposition of trying to bring back slavery, you know, Greg, you and I end up yearning for the even-handed measured times of Harry Reid claiming 10 years of tax evasion on Romney's parts.
Yeah, exactly. Usually the incendiary race baiting doesn't happen until late October when it's clear that the Republicans have the advantage. So for it to happen in August makes you wonder what's coming up in the next few weeks. But Jim, have a great day. We'll see what lunacy the campaign trail provides for us tomorrow.
Always looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.